Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being a part of my day. Always a pleasure to continue to be with you. And I'm Jim Blasingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show. I'm glad you're here. Kenneth Davis is here, too, ladies and gentlemen. Kenneth is a longtime member of our Brain Trust. In fact, this is his 9th anniversary. This very show is his 9th anniversary as a member of our Brain Trust. He's been sharing his great historian knowledge and experience and acumen with us for 9 years now. Been joining us now for a number of holidays, including most recently the Veterans Day. He's the author of all the books on Don't Know Much About History, Don't Know Much About Mythology, etc., etc. He's the author also of Don't Know Much About the American Presidents, on and on, folks. He's a very prolific author. He's here to talk to us about Thanksgiving Day. Kenneth Davis, welcome back. Happy Thanksgiving Day.
And happy Thanksgiving to you, Jim. I'm always grateful, first of all, to be given the opportunity to talk about history. It's fun. It's exciting. I can't believe we've been doing this for 9 years.
I know.
You've been doing it for much longer than that, but really amazing that you've been welcoming me for all these years and you haven't gotten tired of me and my stories yet.
No, I'm a sucker for history, as you know, and I'm a sucker for stories, and I think once a year nobody who could complain about celebrating and talking about Thanksgiving, the Thanksgiving story, even though it hasn't changed. Who can complain about hearing that once a year, right?
Well, it's true, and what's interesting is that we've come away from the, you know, kind of the bedtime story version and have a much better sense of what this holiday was really based on, the first harvest celebration in October 1621. The pilgrims themselves would not have called that Thanksgiving. That to them would have meant a day of prayer and fasting, which, by the way, is what the early presidential Thanksgiving proclamations were.
Instead of a day of gorging and football?
That's exactly right. In fact, 150 years ago, Lincoln made his second Thanksgiving proclamation, and he said it should be a day for his fellow citizens to reverently humble themselves in the dust. I don't know how many people are setting out to do that today, but
most people are reverently gorging themselves and humbling themselves before a television in a recliner.
Yeah, well, I think there are probably some football fans who are hoping the other team will be reverently humbled in the dust. But it's really interesting that what was really meant as a day of introspection and being humble and penitent, all those words, we don't associate with Thanksgiving at all. But the other interesting thing about this 150th anniversary of the Lincoln second proclamation is it was issued, of course, as the Civil War was still raging. And that year, and I write about this in the New York Times today in their Disunion blog, Lincoln, the Union clubs, the Union League clubs,
right,
which were supporters of the Union cause,
there's still one in operation right there in on 34th and Park, as I remember.
And there's one in Chicago. This was a big fraternal society organization. Theodore Roosevelt's father was very prominent.
Yep.
They began the first real frontline feed the troops for Thanksgiving drive that year, and it's really interesting. They sent 400,000 pounds of food down to Ulysses S. Grant's troops in City Point, Virginia, which was then the busiest port in the world. As they were having their Thanksgiving dinner, the people of Petersburg, Virginia, were starving. They were under siege. So this is an incredible
contrast. Because people from Petersburg were Southerners.
Petersburg, Virginia was under siege. It was an important railroad junction connected to Richmond. A year-long siege, and it's actually a story I'm going to be telling.
The big explosion was there in Petersburg.
That's correct. The crater, a very famous, that had happened.
Still there.
The preceding summer, and you can go out and see the after. But this was a siege in which the people of Petersburg were reduced to truly near starvation. As they said, there were no pigeons left around Petersburg.
Nothing like a nice stuffed pigeon, right?
Yeah, a little pigeon pie.
So when you said that the pilgrims wouldn't have called it Thanksgiving, but they were giving thanks, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And probably the ones who were there were giving thanks, mostly that they survived. Let's go back December.
There's only like 40-something of 102 or 10 or whatever. It was
about
still alive.
Half, about 50 of the first passengers on the Mayflower.
The rest of them died.
Most of them died disease. Malnutrition, exposure, they were not prepared for colonizing mm-hmm. Massachusetts in wintertime. They arrived in December, very ill-timed. Most of the women had stayed on the Mayflower until March. The men came ashore and built a small communal mm-hmm. house. And they were dying in huge numbers. In fact, burying the dead at night so that the Native Americans, wouldn't see how much the numbers were falling.
Yeah.
But come October, they had gotten their first harvest in, and they did indeed celebrate. We have a
thanks to help from Squanto, right?
There's no question. That was the extraordinary thing. One day in March, a bedraggled native walks into the village. His name is Samoset.
Mm-hmm.
He speaks a few rudimentary words of English. He comes back a few days later with the man we know as Squanto. He had been taken aboard an English mm-hmm. ship and been a slave for 5 years.
And crossed the Atlantic six times.
That's correct. Making it back to his home village, which was now decimated by disease, mm-hmm. Most likely brought over by Europeans, and he does indeed befriend the pilgrims, and he teaches them some basic farming techniques.
And they set up Plymouth on his village's land.
That's
right?
Correct.
I call it the greatest moment in the history of serendipity.
Well, it was in many ways. They had first landed at the tip of Cape Cod, which is now Provincetown, wandered around there, didn't find enough fresh water at
first. They got run off of there because they went into a graveyard, as I remember. But I just think it's so serendipitous that they landed on Squanto's land. If they landed 200 miles away, who knows what would have happened to them or something like that. You know, it's really amazing when you go back and think of all the things. And folks, you can find all this in Ken's books. Including Don't Know Much About History. Quick break, right back with Ken Davis after these messages. 20 after, stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.